identify what's out there and know at real time what's connected to our network. We're also going to be going through a physical inventory because we do have some machines that aren't connected to our network, and primarily those are ones that are used by our inmates. Those, for obvious reasons, are not connected to our network and are pretty much standalone. So to get to figure out what's out there, we're going to have to go machine by machine. We figure there's anywhere from 300 to 400 machines out there that are being used by our inmates. We plan to have that activity done by the end of this calendar year. So once we get all of that inventory information pulled together, we now have a good, a complete file of what we have out there. It's then at that point that we can take a look and see what is the proliferation of different kinds of licensed software out there, so we can determine what we might want to go out in terms of create or developing, working with companies on enterprise licenses, hopefully get the per cost of each individual piece of software down through doing that. We can also determine what our replacement ought to be, because now we have a full picture of what's out there. We can look and see how old some of our systems are, so that we can match that up with what our budget capacity is and determine in the upcoming biennium and biennium to continue what our replacement cycle ought to be and that kind of thing. We plan to, once we get all this inventory information together, we plan to do the analysis and start to establish some direction by the end of March of next year. That's basically my report, so at this point I'll stop. And
Senator Atkinson, co-chair, is recognized.
The discovery tool, I mean, when that reports back to a central hub of what that machine is, does it say how much free space there is? I mean, other than inventory, I guess, what are you trying to discover with the discovery tool?
Mr. Chair, Senator Atkinson, I don't believe that it goes down to that level. Basically, what we want to discover is what kind of hardware, how much memory does it have, how fast is the machine, what software does it have, so we can assure that every piece of software out there is legally purchased. So it's that kind of information that we're trying to gather. The kinds of things that we might use with that is if we were to implement a newer piece of software that required a certain level of machine, we could then go to the database and say, well, how many machines do we have out there that won't run with this new piece of software, as an example. The other thing that the discovery tool allows us to do is outside the asset management is that our help desk, when they're working on trouble tickets, can actually take a machine over and remotely walk through and fix problems without having to get up from their desk or drive across the state or whatever it may be to actually go fix that problem if it is truly a software problem that doesn't require a point of presence. So there's a lot more advantages we get with that software than just the asset management piece of it.
Thank you. I didn't know much about it. Thank you.
Relative to that, how much DAS RMD oversight is involved in this project?
Mr. Chair, basically, we've been in connection with them in terms of what we're doing and the progress we're making. We had submitted our report to them, but basically that's about it.
Okay, and these are all state-owned computers.
That's correct, Mr.
But Chair. But maybe some of which may be operated by inmate staff.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. And that's for the conduct of activity, state business on these computers, is that right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. They use those for things like in our work-based education, they use it for writing resumes and for training, getting them up to some computer skills. And there is some low-level clerical activities that they're engaged in that they use those.
They're all networked together.
They are. Some of them are networked on a local network. They are not attached to the our main system that our staff.
Are any of those local area networks then attached back into the state? How are you going to use your discovery tool unless they're on the mainframe network?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that's why we're going through the physical inventory.
Okay, all right.
So it's a separate activity.
So the two would basically confirm each other and verify each other.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Are there other questions for Mr. Koreski? Mr. Nicewander?
Yes, committee, in the way of background, this was something that came up during the budget hearings during the 2001 session. It was something that was recognized that with the number of institutions that were coming online and the specific coordination of equipment purchases as well as maintenance was something that was important for budgetary control as well as asset management for the department. So they have made good progress on it, and the department has kept me apprised of their progress, and LFO does recommend that you acknowledge this to the report.
You've heard the recommendation from Legislative Fiscal Office. Are there any further discussion, any dissent, or any votes contrary? If not, we will go ahead and accept and acknowledge that report. Thank you very much, Mr. Jesse. Okay, item number 11.
This is a report to talk to you about the progress the department has made towards its planning effort around the centralization of our telephone services. Again, we were provided in our 2001-2003 legislative approved budget a budget note that directed the department to plan to centrally manage telephone and telecommunication resources, track new connections, set standards, and address agency over expenditure in this area. Now, this telecommunications piece, just for clarification, deals primarily with our voice systems. The data systems have already been centralized. They were from day one, but the voice systems were something that weren't. So prior to this biennium, management of telephone systems was the responsibility of each location. So each institution would have somebody with some sometimes limited expertise in telephone switches and lines and that kind of thing, and they would do the ordering there. So they would order new services, update existing services, pay bills. All of that was decentralized. And unfortunately, I think this is what created somewhat created the budget note. For the last three biennium, the agency's telephone budget, there wasn't enough there to cover expenses, so every biennium they would go back and rebalance to cover ongoing expenses. So what we've done relative to all of this is to first form a telephone support team centrally. And what we did, or what we've done, is hire two limited duration staff who have considerable expertise in telephone systems and telephone billings, which is something we desperately need. I know that monthly I get my personal bill and look over it and wonderment, and I just can't imagine what it would look like, what a telephone bill would look like coming into a large department like this. But these people have the expertise. They're ex-telephone employees, and so they have, in some cases, even know the people on the other side that actually generate the bills. So having these people on staff has really accelerated our efforts. So once we got that team established, we started the process, our inventory process, and the first thing in that process was to automate to audit our current bills. The kinds of things that we're looking for there are obsolete services, things that we're still getting paid for but we're not using, billing errors. And to date, we've found a little over $300,000 in those kinds of efficiencies, if you will, or errors, billing errors, or obsolete services. The next thing that we're kind of in the throes of right now is doing a usage study. So we've first of all taken a look at each of the lines that we're being billed for and look to see, are we using these to their maximum capacity, or are there places where we can combine some lines together? For instance, we had two lines coming into one institution that were using that were used for video, and we looked at that and said, gosh, you know, there's really enough capacity. We can collapse that down to just one line and do all of our video services over one line. So we're basically defragmenting that infrastructure that's out there. The other thing that we're going to be doing is a busy study on the central switches at each one of the institutions and our facilities to see, are we using that particular piece of hardware and software to its maximum capacity. Once we complete that, then we're going to do a physical inventory of each institution and facility. And it's basically with that information that we'll be able to go on site and very quickly go almost virtually desk by desk and make sure that each one of those phones do exist and that, you know, that we're appropriately getting billed for those. Once we complete, and we've already started some of this, but we'll be able to do this much better. Once we complete this whole inventory process, we'll be instituting a really sound, I believe, a sound central management infrastructure. One of the things that we've always already done is instituted the practice of having all of the telephone service orders come in centrally. So we can take a look at those, make sure they comply with standards, with DAS standards, and to just review them with the expertise now that we have centrally to make sure that this makes sense, that that we're not that we're ordering things in the way that they need to be ordered, and that kind of thing. We will also be in the November rebalance, we'll be consolidating all of our telephone budgets into one budget, and that'll be approximately a $3.4 million budget shift into a central budget that we'll be managing then centrally. We have been working with vendors to produce a consolidated billing, so we're going to get one bill from each of the vendors that we work with rather than a fragmented separate one, so that these people with the expertise can look through these bills and make sure that there's no anomalies, that there's that things aren't correct, we're getting billed for services that we ought to be getting billed for, and that kind of thing. We're also in the process, we'll be developing reports then that we will bring all that information into a central database, then we'll create reports that will go out to the institutions that will then show things like their long usage for long distance and that kind of thing, so that at the local level they can review that to make sure that the usage is appropriate.
Mr. Ferris, excuse me, did you say those were existing employees that are already on your payroll or these inmates?
No, Mr. Chair. These are a couple of folks that we hired as limited duration folks at the beginning. Well, just we hired them just this last spring.
Just to assist with this.
Right, at least to get that started. One of the things that we need to look at it on an ongoing basis, I mean, the reason this is successful is, A, we've centralized it, and, B, we've got the expertise centrally. So what we need to look at is what will be the ongoing support that we're going to need once we get through this auditing and inventory and all that kind of thing and really get a good central management system in place.
With the revelations of the problems that Quest is presently having and some of the accusations against the CEO of Quest, maybe you might be able to host him as a guest in one of your institutions and get that free.
Well, I'll leave that up to another jurisdiction, Mr. Chairman.
I think I would enjoy nothing better than to have him reviewing telephone bills in our Department of Corrections right now, based upon what's happened to U.S. West. Yeah, we have a whole group of CPAs from Arthur Anderson come down and help us too, couldn't they?
We have a $6 billion excess by next week.
Would you put that in the form of a motion? I'll second that. Thank you. Excuse me, Mr. Sosin.
So just to finish up, Mr. Chair, our future planning is once we get this central management in place and we really get a arms and a handle around our entire infrastructure, we'll be in a position where we really can start doing some planning around an enterprise-wide infrastructure that incorporates, well, in working in cooperation, of course, with DAS, that incorporates voice, data, and video and try to, you know, create an enterprise system that really looks at that whole picture.
Are there further questions of Mr. Kresge in this regard? Legislative Fiscal?
Chair and committee members, once again, Legislative Fiscal has been kept abreast of the progress they've made on this project, and are very pleased to see that they have done a significant amount of activities that were placed upon them by the legislature, and I expect that it will create some efficiencies, effectiveness, and overall increased ability to monitor their budget and execute a budget that's appropriate in this area. We do recommend you acknowledge receipt of the report.
You've heard the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal. Is there any further discussion? Any dissension? If not, we'll go ahead and acknowledge the receipt of the report, number 12. Now, will we see Mr. Koreski back here in November with regard to the updated activities in the asset management tracking system? That's still in part, next part of that implemented automatic hardware software discovery tool in November?
Chair and committee members, the budget note directed them to report on or before September, so they're not directed to unless you so direct them to come back. At this point, they would come back and report to the next legislative assembly during its budget hearings.
And you're satisfied that that is progressing in the way that it should?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. And item number 12. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mike Zanin. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the Oregon State Police. I'm also serve as the Chair of the Criminal Justice Information Standards Advisory Board. I'm here today to report on the status of the Criminal Justice Integration Standards Program. More specifically, during the last legislative session, we were directed by budget note to develop a comprehensive plan to integrate all criminal justice information, state and local. The budget note directed us to identify barriers to integration, policy issues, whether or not the Criminal Justice Information Standards Program, the CJIS program, was rightly positioned to be effective at that task. Also, there was some legislation that was passed, House Bill 3372, modified the CJIS legislation, ORS 181715, and basically the wording contained in that modification also directed us to develop a comprehensive plan to integrate or to accelerate the integration of criminal justice information across state and local governments. Subsequent to the budget note and to the legislation, we got together with the members of the CJIS community. We hired a project manager from the Department of Administrative Services Project Management Office to facilitate the development of a request for proposal. We went out and competitively bid to have a contractor come in and do a comprehensive assessment and develop a plan to meet the requirements of not only the budget note, but also House Bill 3372. We had several vendors respond to that. We did the analysis, had selected a vendor, and just prior to signing the contract with that vendor, the Department of Administrative Services contacted us and asked us to suspend the going through with signing the RFP. Because they wanted to have a discussion with the CJIS agency directors. Subsequent to that, the Department of Administrative Services hired an independent contractor to come in and facilitate a series of meetings with the CJIS agency directors to try and determine whether or not there was consensus amongst what was most important, how should we be spending our money, and trying to develop kind of a prioritization of what projects we ought to be funding as we look at criminal justice integration. That report was delivered to the Department of Administrative Services director in June of this year, and we have not done anything with the development of a comprehensive plan to accelerate the integration of criminal justice information once that project was postponed.
It's on ice at this particular point?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Representative Patridge is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been pushing for this effort since I arrived at the legislature. I think what's been done with the Department of Homeland Security and all the stuff that's going on at the federal level is this is a microcosm of what's going on. This is about the shared information across data systems for the state of Oregon. I understand we've had some budget crisis and other issues regarding this issue. You know, the budget note we put in the previous session was basically ignored. The budget note we put in this session, I feel like there's been some effort because we had to go in and change the statute to involve DAP IRMD, and I'm very, very pleased with the job that they've worked with us on this. But I am very disappointed in the leadership through the Oregon State Police of moving this effort forward. And I just want to say that for the record. I think there needs to be a change. I think state police have proven now at almost 4 years that they don't have the ability to manage this kind of system, that they don't have the horsepower on staff to do it. And, Mr. Chair, I'm going to write a letter to that effect, but, you know, I think it's critical, especially in these times, that we have data systems that are integrated. Not only do I believe that at some point in time it saves some efficiency for the state by preventing a lot of duplication, but, you know, they take us to the final hours and are asking to put the money back in their budget. And we don't have much choice because we've got to keep the criminal justice system up and running. But I just want to let the state police know I'm deeply disappointed. I have continued and will continue to support state police in their efforts, but I'm disappointed in your leadership. So
this affects more than just the state police. It affects OIA and Department of Corrections.
But it's under state police's guidance and leadership, Mr. Chair, and that's by statute. It's that way.
Right.
And I think, you know, the Department of Administrative Services has the ability to change that, or state police could change how they want to do it internally. But there needs to be a change made, in my opinion.
Well, do I understand, Mr. Zan, that the Department of Administrative Services basically stopped this midstream, and is that?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
I know why they did that, Mr. Chair, because of the budget situation we're in.
I see.
But I think that it's waited for so long for state police to move this that, and the leadership of that, of the CJIS agencies by statute, that continued to prolong this process. And I don't think DAS has received the cooperation that they should have received by the departments that are under the CJIS agency.
Well, I just pen a note to myself that, you know, I'm wondering what this does to the Sheriff's Association, the sheriffs and the sheriff's bosses in the state, how they're continue to be hamstrung trying to gain access. And I guess that's a question. Do you know, Mike, how that does affect our sheriff's offices?
Mr. Chair, I can't give you all the effects on the sheriff's office. I know that there's several efforts going on kind of here and there throughout the state with people regionally trying to pull together information systems that share information across jurisdictions. That's happening more on a regional basis than it is on a statewide basis. The intent of the RFP that we were proceeding forward with was to take a look at the whole picture, was to take a look at statewide, and make some recommendations as to how best to proceed when you look at a statewide system.
Well, I guess one of the concerns that I have is that yesterday I was visited by six of the 130 some odd state troopers that are going to be facing pink slips as a result of the budget crisis, and I don't think we're going to have that kind of an impact on our sheriff's offices. And so if this information that's only been available to the OSP, or primarily available to the OSP in the past, we don't have 130 officers with that additional greater knowledge and information, and if I can't have that information easily shared with the hundreds and hundreds of peace officers locally through the sheriffs and the city and other local enforcement agencies, public safety agencies, then we've substantially hamstrung ourselves. Perhaps Mr. Latimer would like to come forward and just give us an update on the actual RFP and the status of where we're at with regard to these unscheduled OJD funds at this point.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm John Latimer, Director of Information Resources Management Division of the Department of Administrative Services. It's hard to put on business cards. Let me back up a little bit. When I came to DAS RMD, this was one of the issues that was on our plate. And so I went I forget what the first meeting was, sometime late last year, to a meeting of the CEJA Steering Committee. And what I discovered was that there was not a unanimity amongst the folks about what was required by the legislation, even though the legislation I thought was fairly clear, but it became clear to me that there was some apprehension within the community about how it was going to be implemented. In talking to some of the agency policy folks, I also discovered that there was some differences of opinion about how this should go. And then along came the budget crisis, among other things, because if you'll remember early this year, I think the Department of State Police came forward with the cost of doing this system, and it was going to be quite expensive. In talking with the Director of the Department of Administrative Services, we decided that we needed to have someone come in and take a look at or talk to all of the players in this group, because this was not just this data integration. It was also the public safety data warehouse that we were also involved with, and they were in some ways going in different directions, or at least in the same direction on different tracks. And because of the cost of these systems, we felt that the whole criminal justice community, the business of the criminal justice community, had to come together and decide clearly what the business needs were for these systems. We hired a contractor to come in and do that, those reviews with both the technology folks and the business folks in the criminal justice community. And I think, I don't know whether you've seen a copy of her report. I know Larry has. But essentially what she found was, and there's a whole string of things, but what she found, generally speaking, was there was a difference of opinion, not about whether we needed data integration, but how you go about doing that. There was not unanimity among either the policy folks, directors essentially of the criminal justice agencies, or within those agencies, about where to go, either between the policy folks and the technology folks. Clear, honest differences of opinion about this. The more important thing that she found was that because so much of this data is generated at the local level, that it's very difficult for the state agencies as a criminal justice community to make this happen without having the local governments involved. While DAS has, in fact, with the concurrence, I think, of most people, stopped the project because of its enormous cost, that doesn't mean we've made a decision that this is not important to do. We now have extended the contract with our contractor. She is going to bring in the locals and a group of the key leaders in the criminal justice community to get them to coalesce around a set of clear business issues that they want to drive towards an integrated data system. As we went through and we had our meeting with the directors of these agencies, we did find that they did think it was an important business need of theirs to do data integration. But that agreement needed to be fleshed out into how we went about doing that and how we involved our local government partners. And so that's where we're going to go, and we're going to hopefully come in to the next session with a recommendation on how that should proceed.
Question, Mr. Lattimore?
Mr. Chair, I just want to say I think Mr. Lattimore and DAS R&D have done an excellent job in continuing to keep me informed, to keep this on track to some degree, but by the same token, it's the leadership that's involved in this criminal justice information group that's done by statute under ORS 181.715 that I believe is the problem. But, you know, somebody needs to take the leadership reins and role to help get these people together. It shouldn't all be incumbent upon DAS IRMD to try and bring these disparate fiefdoms in the criminal justice community together that are unwilling to talk and work with each other. And you know, I tried to send a message first session. I was very nice about it. We unscheduled this last session, so I don't know what other alternatives. I'm looking forward to getting some stuff from John, but I want to communicate that leadership needs to change on the CJIS committee, in my opinion.
Can you use fiefdoms and criminal justice information systems all in the same?
Sure you can.
Okay. Didn't know whether you could legally do that.
Any chair? Yes, go ahead, please, Mr. Zander. I feel compelled to respond to Representative Patrick's comments. He indicated on the record that we ignored a budget note from the previous session. I do not believe that is the case. We, working with the Legislative Fiscal Office, DAS IRMD, and DAS Budget Management, and the CJIS community, developed a plan per the budget note. In reviewing that plan with Representative Patrick, he did not feel like it went far enough. But to suggest here in this public setting that we ignored the budget note, I think is incorrect. The Department of State Police would welcome, if you want to move the CJIS chair to some other organization and you want to move it for the right reasons, we would certainly support that, and we would play aggressively at the table. But to suggest that the Department of State Police has not provided the leadership, again, I'm going to take issue with that, because I do not believe that is the case. We attempted to fulfill this time around the requirements of the budget note and the legislation by working with the Department of Administrative Services Project Management Office in hiring a contractor to come in and do the very thing that the budget note required. And we were requested by the department to put this project on hold. Now, I'm not debating the issues that John and the contractor came up with. I think that's fine. But what I want to make it clear is I do not believe that we have just sat back and ignored the direction of the legislature. That is not the case.
Representative Smith is recognized.
And for Rob, I'm still a little bit confused. We had some budget notes in order to encourage the Oregon State Police to move on these budget notes. We unscheduled approximately $1.6 million, and now today we're being asked to accept a report and to reschedule or to make a recommendation for the E-Board to reschedule the $1.6
million. That's correct.
Yes, back to the E-Board.
And then follow-up question, Chair.
Yes, please.
And then I guess, just so I have clarity on this issue, Rob, what you're saying is that you don't feel that what you've requested in the budget note has been acceptable?
Well, I think the budget note, has not been complete. What was the request in the budget note has not been done, but we have had a budget crisis that has prevented part of it from being done. My frustration is, we have to continue to keep our information systems going for the criminal justice community. So now we're at a point where we haven't been able to get it all done, too. But I think part of the reason we haven't been able to get it all done is because I feel like the leadership on this CJIS group is so dysfunctional maybe non-responsive is the wrong word. Maybe it's lacking the ability to be able to put something like this together, whatever you want to say. That continues to be my concern. I'm okay to proceed because we've got to keep the criminal justice system moving. So, yeah.
Where's the Sheriff's Association in this process? They want to see it integrated as much as possible as well. I had the impression of that. Does the Sheriff's Association have the capacity to come in and lend a hand here?
Mr. Chair, they certainly are. They're a named member of the CJIS Advisory Board, and they have participated in the past not only in that capacity, but also in the as representatives of the Law Enforcement Data Systems Advisory Board as well.
I'm wondering if, given the proper amount of funding, the sheriffs, the 36 sheriffs in this state who are the highest elected law enforcement officials that we've got, I would think they would work very closely with OSP and with the local, other local law enforcement community to make sure that that system was up and running. And in my experience in local government, we always seem to be able to get the water to the end of the road for at least as many bucks and maybe sometimes less. So maybe that's what needs to happen in the next round, is that you just go ahead and take the whole CGIS out of the locals or the state law enforcement budget and move it over to the sheriffs and make an agreement where they're already in statute, make an agreement with the law enforcement, the Sheriff's Association, the local law enforcement community, the highest elected law enforcement officers we have in the state of Oregon, and say, can you do it for this and will you do it for that? And I would think that you'll get that water to the end of the row. Any further discussion, questions?
Mr. Chair, just one,
please,
one,
Mr. Senator.
One clarifying note on that. The Department of State Police was never funded to provide staffing for CGIS. The money that we've had for projects have been through the grant funding that we've gone out. We've used National Criminal History Improvement Grant for some of the projects we've done. We've used burn grant dollars for some of the projects that we've done to try to do some of the integration projects that we've accomplished over the past couple of years. But as far as a CGIS line item in our budget, there is no such line item.
That is, Representative Patridge is recognized.
I just want to say we changed the statute last time. State police fought to be in control of CGIS again last budget session. So I just want to be clear about my concern about leadership.
Representative Hansen is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems like the problem is not necessarily how do we get the job done, but it's how to provide the leadership to build the consensus of what job it is that we want done.
Absolutely.
And if that's lacking, then you might look to some other way to develop that leadership and that consensus of what we need to get the job done. The physical part of putting the system together, we know there's a cost to that, and at some point we've got to bite the bullet and provide that funding to get it there. But it's that leadership question seems to be.
It looks like to me somebody's been getting it done on somebody's budget. You know, if we can go in and figure out how much that's costing to have it done under that budget, and people are bellyaching. It seems to me that people are upset that it's not getting done with the speed and efficiency that it should be being done, that according to their expectations of the system. That being the case, if there's $1.6 million or if there's $0.6 million, that's allocated to the CGIS program in the OSP budget or wherever it's at. If that could be taken up on the Public Safety Ways and Means Committee, then go ahead and identify what those costs are, peel them out of that budget or those budgets as best you possibly can, offer that as a contract to the Sheriff's Association or the Chiefs of Police Association or whoever you want that has a need for that. For that information and has the propensity to go ahead and try and cooperate to get that information to all of the agencies that are affected by it. It sounds like to me that it could get done. And if the statute doesn't do it here, then a statutory change or an authorization to allow someone else to bring that forward. Someone who has the need of the information and the propensity to share it and the desire to see that it's coordinated in a cooperative manner. And I'm sorry, I've never sat on a Ways and Means process for the Public Safety Committee. You've got a couple here that have at least, have you, Senator, or Representative Hansen, you've sat on, so at least three.
Sat.
So I think that you've got a lot of gray matter that's been rubbed on this. And you see where we're going after two sessions. So let's go ahead and get the job done next time. Let's do it right. Excuse me. I don't mean to make it sound like it wasn't done right before, but we're just not getting the water to the end of the row for some reason. Okay, Mr. Nicewander, did you have
yes, a recommendation? Yes, I would like to make a few comments. Chair and committee members, this has been going, the process procedures have been going on off and on since 1987. It's been there's been a lot of work done. There has been a lot of progress made considering where it was at that time. All the agencies have stepped up their level of participation. It has caused a lot of communication and sharing of information. So progress has been made. It's been to the extent that everybody wants it and has integration occurred. Obviously, expectations haven't been met. But in behalf of the agencies involved here, there were not dedicated resources provided to do this. They were basically operating within existing resources to work in a coordinated effort. And so there isn't a lot of things you could carve out, per se, from my perspective in terms of effort. Having said that, though, I think there is an important thing for this committee to probably provide direction to what you want to have happen coming into the next budget session and what role you want DAS, IRMD, and the agencies involved to play. Certainly, if the statutory concept is something you want to see before you, it would be helpful this time to have that kind of direction given. The recommendation before you today is that you reschedule. I recommend that the board reschedule those funds due to the circumstances that this was unscheduling a part of their information systems budgets for each of these agencies, percentage, if you will, up to approximately 15% pending receipt of this report. Due to a number of circumstances, in this case, beyond certainly all the agencies control, we recommend that you do allow the rescheduling so that those operating budgets are able to operate through the end of the biennium, albeit many of them already at reduced capacity due to the budget reductions.
Well, I would want to make certain that the State Sheriff's Association was brought to the table. I'm coming from a local county government background. I know those people depend upon these information systems and depend upon them not just to be operating but to be cooperatively operated, and somehow or another the $1.6 million of the OSP and the $377,000 of corrections and $830,000 OIA, those amounts were calculated one way or another to be unscheduled pending this activity, and at some point someone had something pretty specific in mind getting done. So I would want to, and I would look to the other members, particularly those of you who have served on public safety ways and means process that have fought this battle, and certainly Representative Patridge, where you have been there, where the difference of sieges working and not working means the difference of bad folks being locked up and held for the appropriate sentencing and so forth. So at that particular point, I would certainly seek counsel from those of you who have served on those subcommittees and be amenable for the November meeting for a pre-introduction of a piece of legislation to get this done. But in the meantime, I'd like to know that DAS, IRMD, and or others, including the OSP CIO folks, have had an opportunity to talk to the city police, chiefs of police associations and the Oregon Sheriff's Association, so that those folks can at least get their two bits in. John Latimer, did you have further comment?
Mr. Chair, our contractor has many years of long experience with both the chiefs of police, the sheriffs, and the district attorneys. So, and that is where we're moving with the next installment of her work, to bring them into this discussion in a large way. You're going to also be faced next session with another big money issue, and that's interoperability of wireless communications. And Representative Patridge mentioned Homeland Security. It's a big issue nationwide. It's a big issue here where our all of our emergency folks from health to the health emergency folks all the way to the state police, the sheriffs, and the city police are in need of finding a way that they can communicate to each other. And this is a leadership role that's been taken on by the state police, and I think rightfully so. But the locals are also involved. And so you're going to see next session a push to try and do something about interoperability of wireless communications. Very expensive to do that. There are a lot of different installations at the local level that, and then even at the federal level, there's a lot of differences of opinion about what bandwidth to use. And so to the extent we can get some of those issues settled, I know the locals really want to, are right there with the state police in trying to get this taken care of. So you're going to hear that in addition to this data integration issue.
Well, maybe we would do well with the Quest CEO in our facilities occupying a 30-month sentence or something. Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chairman Butler. I have several questions. Would it be possible to get a copy of the scope of work you see? I assume there's an RFP that will be released for the plan. I'm trying to figure out what a $1.6 million plan looks like.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the RFP was for slightly over $250,000, $261,000, I think, some change. The $1.6 million was just the amount that the budget note indicated would be unscheduled in OSP's budget, pending a satisfactory completion of this plan. The plan itself was going to be a little over $250,000.
Follow-up question.
Please.
If it's all right, I just want to feel comfortable.
You're giving me lots of room for consideration here. I think, and I'm leaning towards a non-statutory subcommittee of the committee of three members from the House who have previously served on the public safety ways and means to direct you to work with John and Mike to come up with the necessary discussions and solutions to come, to see if you can't come to some potential solution here and figure out what the cost is going to be that needs to be appropriated in the budgets, because there's an OIA and Department of Corrections budgets in addition to the OSP that have been reserved and set aside in part to accomplish this. And I know that it gives LFO a whole bunch of heartburn to have me appoint subcommittees, non-statutory subcommittees of a committee, but I like working that way, because when we've got folks that have an interest in getting the job done that can meet and work with these folks, they have nothing better to do than to come and meet with you while you're waiting around for session to start tomorrow. So
I just, Chairman Butler, I just know $1.6 million is a lot of money, and in our budget shortfall, that means the difference between a school in Morrow County being able to operate and not operate. And so I'd like to know what the $1.6 million is truly being spent on. And then the last question I have, and perhaps Representative Patridge understands that, but I don't. The last question I have is if we schedule this money now, what leverage do we as a legislative body have to ensure that this report gets completed?
Chair and committee members, I just want to reiterate that unscheduling was done at the request of the Information Technology Committee, and it was based on the entire department's IT budget. It wasn't linked to CGIS activities specifically. It was how much of their information systems budget has been approved by Ways and Means. We want to unschedule 15% of that to ensure that we have their attention to come to this committee with progress made on this.
How do we keep their attention once we give them the money?
I would say that this is basic services that this money is going to be used, and Mike would tell you exactly what that would be, what would not happen if that money is not rescheduled, and DOC in a way would probably do the same. The best way is the visibility and accountability that you provide when they come back to the committee to report on progress, and we would recommend that both State Police Service Agency as long as the statute is the way it is, and as IRMD continue to report to this committee on progress.
The total amount is really in the vicinity of $2.8 million when you throw in the $1.6 million from OSP, the approximately $400,000 from, let's see, that's the corrections, and $800,000 from Oregon Youth Authority. So there's a lot of resources here, but it was an arbitrary amount. The 15% was an arbitrary amount, as I take it, this particular point that said, hey, we've got to get some movement from point A to point B here, and here's a way to do it. Let's unschedule this amount and not reschedule it until such time as we've had a report.
I understand. I guess my point is I'll trust Representative Patridge and you, Chairman, in this. I'm not sure what leverage we have once you give them this money. At that point, I mean, from what I've heard for 4 years, this has not been completed. This is the chance for us to ensure that it gets moving forward. And I'm sure, from my perspective, we lose that leverage once you schedule this. But with that said,
The chair is certainly open to any modification to the recommendation that's being proffered by LFO.
The rationale behind that was that there were circumstances that caused the progress to be made to be suspended for good reasons. And as John testified, you know, there were things that they wanted to have reviewed and looked at to see what the leadership positions were, what the agreement was on the direction and the... and also heading down a process that was headed to some significant costs. So, these are very important questions to be answered before any money is spent. And based on John's testimony, there is considerably more effort to be done before more money is spent. So in that respect, the unscheduling and the things that have happened since then were for the benefit of the project and beyond the agency's control. State Police was ready to issue, they had issued an RFP, they were going to have a contract vendor come in and try to do everything they could do to fulfill the requirements of the budget note. But larger questions came up, and DAS rightfully stepped in, perceiving their role in this matter to say, wait a minute, we've got some more things to do. In that respect, the agencies are hard to be held accountable for not making as much progress because there were other things that came up.
Representative Patrick, you recognize?
Yeah. I'm okay to follow Legislative Fiscal Office's recommendation, because I have had conversations with Larry and John Latimer, aside from the leadership issue, which I can't mandate from sitting here. There's not much else we can do. I have a lot of confidence in the contractor that they've hired. I've had the opportunity to meet with the contractor, which I appreciate. I just feel like, you know, I did this for my love of the criminal justice community, for the ability to come back this next session with some kind of package together to offer up an opportunity to put some bonding or something else together to fund a management system for our public safety agencies in the state. And it's frustrating for me to try and put a hand out and extend it for what I believe is right for the public safety community, for the public safety community not to make it a priority when they know it's a problem. And I'm just disappointed more than anything. I'm frustrated and disappointed in the leadership
I think we have a unique opportunity, though. We've got some folks from the representation of local ports and government and county government and the district attorney's background that are represented on this IT committee. If we could have you folks coordinate efforts and work with Mike and John to try and seek a resolution of this, I would feel very comfortable, and then have a brief report back from the five of you in the November meeting of the JLCIMT. I would feel much more comfortable that we then had the issues aired as to local government, as to the district's attorney. As you say, Representative Patrick, you have an affinity for the community that uses that CGIS system. So with that, and from the Oregon State Police and from our
own the gas RMD, I think that we've got enough moxie there to go ahead and figure this thing out and then move forward with it. And I would strongly encourage you to make sure that the Chiefs of Police Association and the Sheriff's Association folks were all brought to the table, because as well as the district attorney, the Association of the District Attorney of the State. Because those are the folks that it really matters to. And the only one that we can really reach out and touch, I mean, we have some nexus over the district attorneys as a state agency, and that's it. So with that, you've heard the recommendation of Legislative Fiscal to acknowledge receipt of the report and to go ahead and reschedule the amounts of $1.6 million for the state police, $377,469 for the Department of Corrections, and $830,238 for the OYA. Is there any further discussion? Any objections to acknowledging and accepting that? If not, we'll go ahead and accept that recommendation. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate your continued cooperation and the work with these members of this unofficial subcommittee of the committee. Thank you. And item number 14, Department of Agriculture. Yeah, he should be back. He's just going to probably. Item number 14, Department of Agriculture. You're going to take care of the PERS. P-E-R-S? Oh, this is P-U-R-S. I thought you had the answer for PERS. Okay. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, I'm Phil Ward, the Director of the Department of Agriculture. With me is Mark Stoller, our Chief Information Officer in relation to this particular project. I'm here today to report on the development of the Pesticide Use Reporting System, the P-U-R-S. And thankfully, I don't have to deal with the other. The other individual that was scheduled to be with me today, Lisa Hansen, decided it was more important to deliver her second child, Mr. Chair, than to appear before you today.
We would excuse her for that purpose.
I had to do that myself, Mr. Chair. So she's had a successful delivery on Monday evening of a healthy baby girl. So
mother and daughter doing fine.
Doing well.
Well, please take our best regards to Lisa.
I'll do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. She'll appreciate that very much. As you know, a 1999 law requires the department to have in place a system to receive reports from everyone who uses pesticides in the state of Oregon commercially in the course of their business or in government, and those reports are due January 31st of this coming year. So we've been working away on the development of the permanent system to implement this program, and we've completed the first two phases of that system successfully with only minor change notifications as a part of the process. We started the third and final phase of this system on August 1st. The internal testing of the reporter component, the piece where reporters report into us, actually begins next week at the department. And that piece and the electronic data submission piece are scheduled for completion the 1st of December. The full project we expect to be completed by mid-February. One of the benefits of the way that this system has proceeded forward with lots of scrutiny has been it's given us lots of time to talk to the reporter community about how to make this work better for them. And we've received, frankly, a lot of input, as you can imagine, and very helpful input, and we've been able to adopt a lot of suggestions from an informal steering group of farmers and ranchers that we've put together relative to this program. I want to talk just real quickly, if I can, Mr. Chair, about the status of the temporary system, which has been in operation now for nearly 9 months. So we've had a temporary system, up and going for 9 months to allow people who wanted to get a head start on this process going. We have about 1,100 people already registered to report into the pesticide use reporting system utilizing the temporary system.
we've received nearly 50,000 reports already from 560 different reporters. A lot of these have been what I would characterize as high-volume reporters, people who apply pesticides professionally in the course of their business, a pest control operator, we might call them, someone who does urban applications. And these folks do such a volume of pesticide applications during the year that they have elected to start early in the temporary system so they didn't have a big crush of work to do come the first of the year. And then we've had a large number of folks, nearly 500, that have decided just to try out the temporary system while it's up and running. And so that's been going forward. We've identified through the process, Mr. Chair and members, a number of challenges in the implementation of this system. And, of course, as you go through a project of this nature, things always arise that you have to deal with, and I'd like to articulate just a few of those for you. And Mark would be happy to answer any questions you might have on those. Several of the adjustments we've made to the development of the permanent system have come directly at the request of the reporting community. So folks that are making these reports, as we've been meeting with them, as the system has been being developed, have made several suggestions. One is creating a process where we would allow multiple third-party service providers, proxies, to report for folks online and still keep a secure system and keep the reporter's confidentiality involved. What we've got is we essentially have a number of service providers developing to do this electronic reporting for farmers and ranchers around the state. For example, if I buy my fertilizer from Wilbur Ellis, or someone or another provider of this nature, many of these companies are offering to do the pesticide use reporting. And so we have a situation where folks who buy chemicals from more than one spot need to have the ability for multiple folks to be access their ID and use it, and need to still keep a secure system. So we've been dealing with that. Developing a mechanism, secondly, Mr. Chair, where reporters are notified automatically anytime that there's a change made at the department to the status of their report. Sometimes reports come in, they're incomplete, our staff can see things that might just be an addition error, et cetera, where the thing can be modified, and then we've developed a mechanism where that's immediately tagged back to the reporter, and they're notified.
Phil, you mentioned fertilizer. Is fertilizer reportable under the PURS?
No, sir, Mr. Chair. I misspoke there. I think of fertilizer and chemical dealers
right
together, and so it's the pesticide component.
Yeah.
But you're accurate. This does not cover fertilizer. The last thing that the reporters mentioned to us, I just mentioned quickly, they wanted an easy way for us to provide access to them to past reports they'd put in so that they could look up those reports. Lots of times the next time they're going to make a report, it's going to be the exact same application at the same rate on the same property. So no reason for them to have to do everything all over again. So we've provided through drop-down menus a way for them to get back to those past reports relatively easily. In our own internal development work, we found a couple additional challenges that I'd like to mention to you real quickly. One is integrating EPA's pesticide database into Oregon's system. The EPA system is an extremely complex and large volume system. And so we have to integrate that into our system so reporters can access the EPA identification numbers for the chemicals they're reporting on. We've had to develop a system where we screen down to the products that are registered for use in Oregon as the first alternative that reporters get to. So they have a lower volume of things to look through to select what they want as the number they need to assign the product. So we've been dealing with that successfully. Converting location has become an issue in this particular project. There are several different ways that location is allowed to be reported to the department in terms of location where the application's made, pesticide application's made. There are two different ways that the law requires us to report out that information. So information coming in has to be reported by township range section, or by address, or by global position, by GPS. But the information that we produce out in terms of the statutorily required reports has to come out by watershed or county. And so making those conversions has proven more of a challenge than we anticipated. But we have indeed developed a methodology to address that, and we believe are successfully getting that done. Also, lastly, the other thing that we've noted as we've worked through this process is dealing with the complexities of a functional EDS system, electronic data submission system, where folks don't have to be online live, but they can use their own, put their own database together at home and then submit it at once and do the work offline. That has presented some challenges that we believe we're successfully meeting at this point. Mr. Chair and members, the department has identified and begun to implement practical solutions for all these issues I just raised. If you have questions about any of them specifically, Mark can provide the detail. This will require purchasing a minimum amount of additional hardware that will have a minimal effect on development costs, around $50,000. And even with the enhancements that I've just described to you to address the reporter issues, we will be significantly under the legislatively approved budget for this issue, or for this project when it's completed, probably over $800,000 under the $1.9 million development budget that you all provided to us. So, Mr. Chair, that concludes my report. Mark and I would be happy to respond to any questions.
Representative Smith is recognized.
Chair Butler. Bill, take me back to the original intent of the pesticide use reporting system. I assume the people who are going to be reporting on this are applying legal chemicals. So is the purpose of this just to gather data?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I think the purpose of this program, as it was articulated legislatively, was that it was in the interest of the people of the state of Oregon to have good data as to how the volume and nature of the commercial chemicals that are applied in the state of Oregon. And essentially that law directed us to acquire this data from anyone who applies commercially in the course of their business. So that might be me if I had a pest control operation in Portland. It's definitely going to be me for my little tar cherry operation south of Independence. The law requires anybody who does commercial application to report to the agency.
Let me clarify.
Please follow up and clarify.
What I'm struggling with is once you gather that information, what's the point? Now you have the information. Now what?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think what the law, again, all I can do is go back to what the law directs us to do.
Right.
But the law directs us to summarize that information by watershed, and then to provide that information to interested parties, to you all in a report back to you, and then to other interested parties, to environmental researchers. I frankly believe that ultimately that this data could have a significant benefit to the agriculture industry in the state, because it'll provide for the first time solid data on what actual usage is, as opposed to what the legal limits of usage could be. And in my experience as someone who does a little bit of farming, that farmers generally use less than the legal limits. So this could help us keep chemicals available to farmers as we're working through these issues with the Federal Environmental Protection
Act. Follow-up, Representative.
The reason I ask this question is part of the legislation was also, I think it made it very clear that strict confidentiality would be maintained. How do you gather this information and share it with different groups, from accredited research institutions and universities to environmental researchers? How do you maintain confidentiality as this information is being passed to a whole slew of people?
Chair, Representative, that has been one of the issues in this whole process that has gathered the most attention. And as a result, from a technology standpoint, we have developed, what our contractor who's worked with us on this describes as a hate to use the word overkill, but I think that's the word he's used, a very sophisticated system of security, including two firewalls and other processes from a technology standpoint to keep access to that information limited to only those who have legitimate reason to have it. Now, that's just half the equation, though.
Can I follow up?
Please.
What if there's a breach of confidentiality? What's the penalty?
Well, there are penalties. For example, if I'm a researcher that's allowed privileged data here, because researchers from recognized institutions do have, under the statute, the ability to access some of this information, there's a $10,000 per breach penalty in the law.
One quick follow-up.
Please.
Who has the ability to enforce that?
That is, I believe, my responsibility, Mr. Chair and Representative.
Can I one last follow-up?
Certainly. You bet.
Totally different question. One of the issues I've heard all along on this, and I think it's a very valid issue, and perhaps it's been addressed since we've looked into this, how do you deal with the farmers and the ranchers who don't have the ability to submit these forms online? I mean, these are people who are salt of the earth, who know how to use a pencil and a paper, and have no desire to turn on that computer. And my understanding is, unless you do it online, you cannot submit the report.
Chair Representative, your understanding is accurate, and that direction came to us through the legislature in a budget note we received a session ago. And so the only way that we have to receive information from folks is electronically. That is one of the things, frankly, that has generated a heck of a lot of interest, both on our parts and out in the community. One of the things that we're seeing that is perhaps the silver lining to this particular challenge is a whole bunch of the folks that do business with these farmers stepping up and saying, we want to provide this service to our customers. And so we, frankly, are seeing that develop. And my gut feeling is that where a farmer does not have the ability to take care of this at home, that there is going to be more than one service provider willing to step in and help him with that.
I don't mean to utilize it all the time, but this is important to my home district. What would the cost be of allowing those folks to submit it via paper? We're implementing a program on them, asking for them to provide information. It seems like somehow we can make it accommodating.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I believe the fiscal impact of that, and Mark, you're free to correct me if you have a different recollection, was around $600,000 per year. To do a paper piece. Yes, sir. To add a paper piece to the electronic.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I served on the Natural Resources Committee, and probably we dealt with natural resources, subways, and means, and we dealt with this a lot more than we ever wanted to, and there were some real ugly trade-offs. One was just the absolute budget crunch, that it wasn't felt that the state had the resources to provide both the develop the electronic reporting system and at the same time a paper system. And the costs, it would have been wonderful if we could have done both, but the budget realities were just, you just couldn't afford to. The other thing I'd like to say is compared to the original dollars that we were talking about, you've done an incredible job in terms of bringing these costs down. We had some real different figures back during the last session, and I'm very pleased to see how this has worked out, and being able to use some off-the-shelf components and things. You've done an incredible job. The one question I have, though, and this is, I haven't had much feedback from people coming in to this session, this meeting, but there's been considerable controversy all the way through in terms of the reporting and the specificity, in terms of going down to the to the range and the township data versus, has that subsided at all? Or are we still, is that still, have you been able to bring the two sides closer together in terms, and the problem was if you need to be fairly specific in terms of where the pesticides are being put, or the information, how it relates to watersheds and stuff, isn't very helpful to the researchers. And then you've got the confidentiality. If you bring it down real specific, it doesn't take brain surgery to figure out who's doing what. And has that been resolved? Are people more comfortable with that now, or are we just going forward and hoping that it will work out?
Mr. Chair, your members have identified all the controversial and challenging issues that I'm aware of at this point. That was the final big area of controversy relative to this issue, is to what degree should location be identified. And the rules currently specify that reports be made at the section or the 1 square mile level. There are a lot of folks in the community that feel like that is too specific and may indeed be a challenge to the security issues that you raised earlier, Representative. So I would say, while that debate has certainly quieted it, I don't think that the total concern has gone away in the community on that issue. But we are implementing, as per the rules that have been enacted at this point in time, requiring reports at the section level.
Bill, this is a very, very specific question, and I don't want your pesticide use people to come out and arrest me. So I've got a boar worm in a tree in front of my office. I think it's a boar worm. Anyway, I've been shooting him with all kinds of liquid tar to try and see if I couldn't just smother him to death. And I think we've about got him dead after 3 years. Am I going to have to turn that in, because that's a commercial office?
Chair, my answer to that would be no.
But if I bring my can of Raid from home and spray him, and then spray on the tar, the liquid tar, then I've used the pesticide. That's a commercial office. Then your answer would be different?
My answer, Mr. Chair, would be the same. I would believe that application to be incidental to your commercial activity.
Thank you very much. I just want to make absolutely certain that if I have to spray the ants in my office or those kinds of things, because it is an accounting office after all. I just didn't want to get into the pesticide use reporting system because I was trying to kill a bug in my plant. Thank you very much, Representative Hansen.
You could use Oreos and a hammer.
Yes. That method does work. I think you probably have used that too.
Chair Butler.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Butler. I just want this committee to know how good Phil has been to work without in Eastern Oregon. I have a rough group of folks I deal with sometimes, and Phil's always been very fair and
it's almost like he has roots out there, isn't
it? That's right. And so thank you, Phil, for
Thank you, Representative. And thanks to you, Mr. Chair, and your members. I was thinking, as Representative Hansen was talking, that we've had a lot of good help from you, your staff, and from DAS IRMD that have helped make the system as it has developed now better than it would have been without that help.
Well, we certainly appreciate the diligence with which you've worked and the dedication that you have to the community who has been most affected by this, and that's appreciated, plus the economies that you've worked under too, Director Ward. So with that, Legislative Fiscal Office, your recommendation?
We're recommending acknowledging receipt of the report.
You've heard the recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Any objection to the receipt of the report? Seeing and hearing none, we will say thank you very much.
Thank you.
Carl.
Carl, you didn't have your colored report this time.
Yes.
Well, it's in the book, colored, but I looked through and didn't see much red on my report, so I thought, my goodness gracious, what was that? Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Carl Weineke, State Quality Assurance Manager. I'm here to report on the status of our IT efforts that we currently have going in the state. At this point, I'm tracking 21 projects with a total budget of $127.3 million. Key events in the period since our last meeting, the Department of Human Services, the Seniors and Persons with Disabilities Division has closed its Access project, which is this automated computer capture and storage system project. Within the report, it's item number 3. It remains in the report because we have not received the lessons learned report from the project folks yet. I expect to have that for the next report, and I will report on it then and officially close it and remove it from the report. One additional project has been added to the report. It's number 19. It's from the Department of Corrections. It's out of their Programs Division, and it's their Transition Automation Project. And this project is intended to merge 5 disparate systems within the division, the Programs Division of the Department of Corrections, into one centralized system. And that project is just being fleshed out at this time, and I'll be reporting more on that as progress occurs on that project. One project, number 9, the Public Safety Data Warehouse project, has been suspended due to lack of funding. I will remove this project from the report and will not report on it until we have future activities, but it remains on the report at this time. Based on the QA contractors' reports and IRMD's analysis of those reports, the state is not in any danger of losing any projects at this time. There are, however, 4 projects in the moderately high or above range, and the ratings on all of these projects are related to how the projects are being performed as opposed to the project itself. And I would expect improvement in these projects, and we'll be working with those projects over the next quarter. So I would expect some improvement in this area with our next reporting. We have one active project also, which is the pesticide use one, which was also rated moderately high because of the funding issues. But it didn't sound like that was current at this point in time. Over the next few months, I will be expanding the reporting system that we use to generate this product for you, and I should have a new report, a new format for the report, and a better report at the end of the year or the January reporting. I'll keep you appraised of the progress on it, but we're going to put a web interface on it, and we'll be capturing a lot more information. We'll be able to track projects. We'll also be able to make it available for agency use within their organizations to track their projects also. That concludes my presentation for today. I'm available to answer any questions that you may have about any projects.
Representative Smith is recognized.
Thank you, Chair Butler. A naive question, because I'm not familiar with what's going on here. You made mention that projects were not lost. I don't understand that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, project being lost or losing a project means that it will be a failed project. One that we would terminate, and we would lose the investment that we have in that project at this point in time, and it would not satisfy its original requirements.
Can you give me an example? Chair Butler, can you give me an example of why a project would fail? I'm sorry, I don't understand this.
Well, there are lots of reasons that we've had in the past. We heard earlier today the project, the DMV project. And that particular project had a lot of interesting facets to it, which related, you know, resulted in its being canceled. Even within that canceling, there was a substantial amount of information and aspects of that that were still usable. However, there was some lost revenue as a result of that.
So just so I can understand.
Please, please proceed.
So a project was initiated by a department, and then midway through a project, for one reason or another, it was deemed in the state's best interest to stop the project. Is that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, correct.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to figure out. Thank you.
Sorry.
Carl, this is, I think, for the benefit of myself as much as anyone else, this is largely an outcome. Your function and activity here is largely an outcome of a fairly substantial IT project that went very, very sour on the state at one point a number of years ago. And so now you monitor and watch these programs very closely. To help us give us some level of roadmap well before we get to the curves as to what we may be looking at. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that is absolutely correct.
Okay.
Can I ask one more question?
Oh, absolutely. At your will.
Who do you... I'm just going to ask this, if that's all right. Who do you work for?
Mr. Chairman...
Didn't you remember signing his check?
Good
heavens and earth, he's been freed all this time.
I work in DAS, but I consider the people at this table to be my employers.
So, follow-up question?
Very valuable. Go ahead.
So then, the legislature, if they needed to get an update on a specific project that's listed in here, we could contact you and say, can you tell us the status of this project?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, correct.
One last question.
He eats and sleeps and drinks this stuff. You just love it.
From a legislative perspective, if we wanted to look at the opportunity cost of one project versus another, we could contact you and get a unbiased opinion of one project versus another.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, keep in mind, though, that once I start tracking a project, it's already an approved project. And if you were looking at a proposed project, then the opportunity cost might apply as to one versus the other. But once it is initiated, then my looking at it looks at it as its burn rate, is a progress being made commensurate with the burn rate of the dollars? Do we appear to have the project management within the organization? Do we have agency attention to this project? Are they mitigating the risks and those type of efforts?
One last question.
Please. At your will.
I just want to understand your position just a little bit more. What happens if your assessment is different from that of the Department of Administrative Services? Has that occurred?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Smith, my assessment is always taken by my department. It has never been argued. It's always been accepted. It's created dialogue. I'm not sure that in all cases they totally agree with it, but it does create the dialogue, and we've been able to work through all the issues.
Very nice meeting you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. John, would you like to come forward and give us your take on that?
One of the things that we learned a long time ago, in fact, when I was sitting in the chair that Dallas is sitting in, was that we did not have a good process for assuring the quality of IT projects. The DMV project is classic because we all remember that, but there were a whole series of failed projects even before that. And we debated how we might get a handle on that and developed over time in statute this quality assurance process. I think it's absolutely critical that quality assurance process be independent. And I would hope that if Carl ever felt that it wasn't independent, he'd come and talk to me about that because I can assure you, Representative Smith, that we would rectify it. Even prior, we've got a project internally that they've raised some risk issues with, and we're mitigating those risks. I'm not going to tell him he can't do that, because it's really important that we have put in place a whole series of attempts to really get our hands around these projects. We've implemented project management statewide, so that we have a project management office. We have a training process where a lot of the agency folks have been trained in good project management. We are always looking at the QA process. We're not satisfied even yet that the QA process works as well as it can. So we're constantly trying to improve it. And we're working, Carl is working with the contract QA folks as a group to come up with better ways to make their job work better, so that we can all be assured that we don't have these debacles that we've seen in the past.
Thank you. Representative Hansen is recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One thing I'm pleased with in terms of this committee and work coming out of Dams, we also have to have a real general open climate, because a project failure isn't the worst thing that can happen. Pulling the plug on a bad project, and there's lots of reasons the project can be bad. I mean, it can either be changing technology, hoping to get to cutting-edge technology that doesn't quite materialize. Sometimes there's management issues that the project's not really well thought out from the start. The only thing worse than a project failing is having it linger on too long and throwing a lot of money at it, which we've seen happen in other situations, that can compound some initial mistakes or problems, and can compound them to the point that they get a lot more expensive if you go too far. So one thing is, if you can have a climate where a project can be killed without, you know, a witch hunt of assigning blame or whatever, that's probably a good climate to operate in. And technology is changing so fast, and there are so many opportunities, that sometimes we can also damage ourselves if we're not willing to take some early on risks. But the worst, but what you want to do is be willing to take those early risks, but not compound them on and on into the future if it turns out that the risk is maybe greater than we thought, or things aren't panning out. And that, I think, so far I've seen a willingness to stop projects if they're not, and I don't see that as necessarily a project that's killed, or the fact that it's killed might very well be a very good thing, and that the worst problems I've seen, and this is more from some local government experiences, is projects that got off to a bad start. Or weren't well thought out, and then the errors were covered up, usually covered up at considerable cost, because nobody was willing to step forward and say, well, maybe this was a bad idea. So I think we're, and then that constant reevaluating and learning from those mistakes is a real important process too.
I believe that the objective quantification and assigning of numeric values to a project or to programs which have been very subjective in the past, and then actually assigning colors of, you know, of how you feel about getting the job done and what your risk of getting it done right on budget, I think is a very valuable tool and a very valuable resource to us. And I do appreciate the work that Carl does and the degree of latitude that he has given to go ahead and report the objectivity. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Beller. I was just going to echo that this is the best I have felt since I've been here, to see this type of information where we can just look at
projects and get an independent perspective on how a project is moving forward. I think you're a godsend to this body, and the one thing I would encourage is for you to get this information out to more individuals. I mean, as a freshman, I'm very naive, and I served on nothing but Ways and Means, and this was the first time I've seen this.
And just think how good you would have felt if you'd have come to our very first meeting, because we always...
I know. I feel guilty about that, Chair.
Mr. Chair, if I might...
That was harsh.
John. He owed me a couple.
Rich Manson makes a very good point. I remember back when I was Legislative Fiscal Officer and we had a project, and you won't ring bells with anybody here because it was back in the early 90s, but it was Cascade. It was a DHS process project, and we were raising issues about it. There were management issues. It was not well thought out. It was not well... the project was not well designed and or managed. And not within a month after Gary Weeks was named director of Department of Human Services, he came in and shut that project down, and we all applauded it because it was throwing money. It was $19 million they threw away, but he would have, to fix it, they would have had to throw a whole lot more money into it. Now, granted, most of it was federal dollars, but we still pay federal taxes. So I think that it is beginning to work, and people are beginning to understand how important this process is.
Thank you. Dallas, do we take any official action here? We just acknowledge our appreciation for Carl coming forward.
Yeah, I was going to say,
given this is telling, but
you know, Mr. Chairman, other than heaping praise on him,
which we have done in abundance. So with that, is there any further discussion? We'll go ahead and close. Not recess, but adjourn. Actually, close.